Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Gray Matter. Well, today we have on the program for the first time a political leader, leader of a party, the leader and founder of the People's Party of Canada. And he's famous for saying several things, many of which are somewhat controversial. But to those of us who lean towards the center or the right side of the political spectrum, he makes eminent sense. So he's quoted as saying things like this. He says, there is dangerous sloganeering about diversity that threatens to undermine Canada's social cohesion. He says that Prime Minister Trudeau's extreme multiculturalism and cult of diversity will divide us into little tribes that have less and less in common. He says that having people live among us who reject basic Western values such as freedom, equality, tolerance, and openness doesn't make us strong. And he concludes that people who refuse to integrate into our society and want to live apart in their ghetto don't make our society strong. And this man's name is Maxime Bernier. So we're very pleased to have him on the show. We're going to get into some of his ideas, and he has many of them about things that are affecting Canadians. But before we go there, as we always do, we have a few quotations that have been selected somewhat in his honor. The first one is from an economist who I understand is someone that Max is fond of or fond of reading. His name is F.A. Hayek, who is quoted as saying, emergencies have always been the pretext on which the safeguards of individual liberty have been eroded. And I think everyone understands the context of that one. Mr. Hayek also said, I do not think it is an exaggeration to say history is largely a history of inflation. Usually inflation's engineered by governments for the gain of governments. And again, that's pointed squarely at our liberal government. And finally, from Samuel Adams, former really one of the pillars of the American constitutional period, who famously said, does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority keen on setting brush fires of freedom in the minds of men. So, Max Bernier, let's talk about him a little bit. I borrowed a little bit from his own page to find out that, of course, he's a Canadian politician. He's the founder of his party, as we said, and formerly a member of the Conservative Party and a cabinet minister, high-ranking cabinet minister. He left the Conservative caucus in 2018 to form his own party. And he was the member of parliament for both from 2006 to 2019 and served as cabinet minister in the Harper government. Prior to entering politics, he worked in law. We won't hold that against him here. finance and banking. First elected the House of Commons as a Conservative in 2006 in the same riding as his father, Gilles, who represented that same riding from 1984 to 1997. He held a number of important portfolios in Stephen Harper's cabinet, including industry minister, foreign affairs minister, Minister of State for Small Business and Tourism, following the 2015 election in which Mr. Trudeau, sadly, was successful. While the Conservatives were no longer in power, he was still re-elected as an MP. However, since then, after going through a leadership process with Andrew Scheer, unfortunately, Max was unsuccessful there under somewhat controversial circumstances, but undaunted, he started his own party. And he's also taken economic libertarian positions on issues such as opposing supply management in the Canadian dairy industry and government subsidies for arenas. He's against mass immigration to Canada, supports repealing the Multiculturalism Act, and rejects a scientific consensus on climate change. And during the COVID-19 pandemic in Canada, which is the period during which I had the pleasure of meeting Max, at least via telephone, he opposed mandatory vaccinations, public health measures, and attended many anti-lockdown protests. And at one point, he was arrested for violating public health orders at a gathering in Manitoba. And where I actually first met Max, I don't know if he remembers this, but he was going through the Okanagan in the spring of 2021. At that time, I think he and Derek Sloan were the only politicians in Canada traveling around, and at some personal risk. And I met him there, and was very, very impressed with the courage that he showed. And so very grateful to have you here on the show. Finally, thanks for being with us today, Max.
Thank you, Leighton. I'm very, very pleased to be with you. That's an honor for me. And yes, when we had that phone conversation, I was in jail, actually. You're right about that. Before the last election, last summer, after a political gathering in a park in Manitoba, as you know, I was arrested and cuffed and put in jail for a known crime. I believe that was political repression. And I'm still waiting the time for the hearing of that case. It's always postponed and postponed and postponed. I believe that the Crown understand that they don't have a very strong case. So we'll see what will happen.
You were, however, successful recently in defeating a charge that was a similar type of ticket that was brought against you in Saskatchewan, though. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. In Saskatchewan, during the election night, I delivered a speech over there, and I was not wearing a mask. I received a ticket for that, and I just received the news, I believe, 3 weeks ago that they're not going ahead with that. You know, it was all to scare people, all these tickets during the COVID-19 pandemic. I did a lot of rallies, like you said, in that time, all across the country, with Randy Hillier also in Ontario. And I think I had for $10,000 of tickets. And all these tickets have been postponed or withdraw. And that was another tactic to scare people and to be sure that these rallies won't have a lot of people. But the first rally that I did in Montreal in March of 2020, I believe that we were about 100 person. And the last rally that I did in Montreal, a year and a half after the beginning of the pandemic, we were 45,000 people. So I believe that we won that battle. And now more and more people understand the fear, the propaganda is not efficient anymore. We have the facts and the science on our side. And I was very pleased to see last weekend, last Sunday, in the Journal La Presse in Montreal, they did a poll and they asked a question for unvaccinated people. And they asked them if they believe that they will take another shot, the third one or the fourth one. And the good news was 69% of them, 69% of vaccinated Quebecers said they won't. So I believe that we are winning that battle. More people understand that these vaccine passport mandates and stay-at-home orders and in Montreal a curfew was not necessary. We didn't do the right thing as a society. I said at that time, we must protect the most vulnerable people and let's reopen the economy. So I believe that later on it will be difficult if a provincial government wants to go back to lockdowns and curfew this fall. I believe that they will have difficulty to impose that.
I know that one of the platforms of your party, what's essential to its policy, and correct me if this is wrong, this is my understanding, is basically smaller government that is not involved in every aspect of people's lives. Fundamentally, your philosophy is libertarian. What's facing Canadians right now, the problem seems to be in terms of the control that the federal government has over health, which, as you know, is a provincial authority, is that the federal government has all this money and they use it to manipulate provinces, to get provinces to accept their policies concerning health. Are you concerned that that is going to happen again if the federal government continues to ramp up its propaganda about COVID-19 and now monkeypox?
Yeah, it can happen. But before answering that, the PPC, the People's Party, maybe on the economy, we are for free markets and more like a libertarian, but also we believe in classical liberal values, Western civilization values, family values. And, you know, we are, like I like to say, that we are a smart populist party because we try to appeal to the intelligence of Canadians, not to their emotions. And that's very different. That's why I'm saying all the time that if you like what I'm saying, I hope I will have your support. If not, you know, I won't change our policies, vote for another political party. We created the PPC for an alternative to these establishment political parties based on four principles: individual freedom, personal responsibility, respect and fairness. And all our policies are in line with these principles. So that's why we are a smart populist party with common sense policies. We are putting Canada first, our country first, our people first, and without any compromise. And so that's why we don't do politics based on survey and polling. We are doing politics based on conviction. And I just want to add, you know, like the Conservative Party of Canada, that's why I left the party, because I said in 2018, that party is intellectually and morally corrupt because they have the name Conservative and they are promoting leftist ideology. And they are giving more credibility to the leftist narrative. And actually, before I left the party, I tried to speak with the establishment of the party for 18 months. And I spoke with Andrew Scheer after 18 months, after the leadership. And I asked him a straight question. Why you are not taking some of my ideas? You know, I didn't win the leadership with 49% of the vote. And these ideas were very popular. And he was, I must admit, he was very honest. He said, Maxime, we won't take any of your ideas for the next election, the 2019 election, because your ideas were very popular with the membership of the Conservative Party of Canada. I agree with you on that. But they're not popular with the general population. So our goal is to win an election. And that's why we won't take any of your ideas. So that's the Conservative Party. And you have another proof of that with the COVID-19 hysteria in 2020. They were nowhere to be seen. The Conservative Party were not opposing Justin Trudeau. We didn't have any real opposition in Ottawa. We were the People's Party, the only opposition, because it was not popular to speak against the government at that time, because fear and propaganda was very efficient. And if you did a poll at that time in March 2020, 65 to 75% of the population agreed with these measures at that time. So if you're a political party in the opposition, your goal is to be in government, and your goal is not to unplease these people. You want to have their support. So that's why we didn't have any opposition in Ottawa and in every province at that time. So that's another example that the Conservative Party is morally and intellectually corrupt. So I just want to put all that all there. And if people want to know more about the party and our policies, they can go on our website, peoplespartyofcanada.ca, and read our policies, because they won't change. That's why we're not doing politics by survey. The platform for the election in 2019 was the same one for the last election in 2021 and will be the same one for the next election. So we are doing politics by conviction, and we believe that we have the best vision for this country, the best ideas for this country. And the more you speak about it, the more support you will have. And actually, I believe I was right, because when we started the party in 2018 at 0%, first election 2019 for us 1.6, and our second election in 2021, 5%. So speaking about our platform, I want to answer your question later now. So yes, we believe that the federal government is interfering in provincial jurisdiction in healthcare. And our position is very, very bold on that. We have to respect the Constitution. The federal government must not interfere in provincial jurisdiction. And instead of taxing Canadians and using that money to give that to provinces for healthcare and under some conditions, we must stop that. You know, the federal government is transferring about $40 billion to provinces for healthcare. We want provinces to be responsible and being able to raise their own money for their own responsibility. So what they must do, what we must do, we must give them the GST. The GST must be under the control of the provincial governments, and like that, they will have the money. They will be able to raise the money for their own responsibilities. And by doing that, actually, the federal government raised about $42 billion for the GST. So give that to provinces, and they will have the autonomy to do what they want to do. And if you do that, Canadians will know who to blame for waiting times for surgeries here in Canada. They don't know who to blame right now. Is it the federal government, because the federal government is not giving enough money to provinces? Or is it the provincial government because they're not efficient at managing healthcare? Now they will know who to blame. It will be the provincial government, and provincial governments will have to ask a question. They want to put more and more money on healthcare, a system that is not working, or look at another system like in Europe, when you have private delivery of services and public delivery of services, but under a unique umbrella, and everybody has a universal coverage. So, but they can choose if they go to a private clinic or a public hospital. So we must have a mixed system like that under a universal coverage. We are the only party that is speaking about that. And I believe that's the real solution for the challenges of the healthcare system here in our country.
Well, it seems that Mr. Scheer, history has judged him harshly, because the Liberal Light platform that they went forward with in 2019 obviously was not successful. And here you have the fastest growing party in Canada. So obviously your message resonates with a great many Canadians. One question I have for you, Max, and you've probably been asked this a lot, but I haven't heard your answer. You know, right now, many quote-unquote conservatives are excited about, you know, what's happening with their own leadership race. And many people have actually speculated that, given what Mr. Poilievre has said publicly, that perhaps you might consider gravitating back towards that party. You've probably heard this yourself, but I don't want to overstate this, but I mean, what you said about that party a few minutes ago, has that really changed under the current leadership situation? Or is what we're hearing from that party and from people, from the candidates who are trying to win, really just more rhetoric and not really conservative politics and conservative values?
But my answer is very simple. You know, it's look at you are in a leadership contest for a conservative party. If you want to win that leadership, you have to speak like a conservative, like I did in 2017. And O'Toole understood that. He said during his campaign after that he is the only true blue, and he was able to win. And after that, he went to the left to be able to be in government. So the same thing is happening right now. Pierre Poilievre is speaking like a conservative to win the leadership. And I understand, I predict that he will win, but the party is still morally and intellectually corrupt, because Poilievre, like all these establishment politicians, when we needed them to fight for real conservative freedom values, they were not there, nowhere to be seen. And Pierre Poilievre actually said in an interview that he was pro-freedom in the beginning, but for him in the beginning, it's in August 2021 when Justin Trudeau imposed the vaccine passport for Canadians travelers. When he imposed that passport, Poilievre said that he was against that. That's a lie, because at that time, only six shadow cabinet ministers spoke against that in August 2001. And what happened to them? O'Toole did a shuffle of his shadow cabinet in November. I believe it's November 9, in November 2021, after the election. And all these six shadow cabinet ministers lost their job because they were not speaking the party line for vaccine passport for Canadian travelers. And Poilievre received a promotion because he was silent, and he was silent until February, the first week of February, when it was a little bit more popular and less risky to speak for freedom. So that's showing everybody that is a traditional establishment politicians and without any core values. And so I believe that he will be the leader, and I believe that he will do politics like the party did before, because their only goal is to be in government. And so to be in government, they will have to have more seats in Ontario, in the big GTA. And to do that, because we are in a socialist era in Canada, socialism and wokeism everywhere, it will go to the left like O'Toole did. Maybe it will take a little bit more time, but it will do it. So we cannot trust the Conservative Party to fight for real Western civilization values. And that's why, answering your question, this party is there for the long run. And I believe at the next election, we'll be able to have some candidates elected. And no, there's no deal to go back and to merge. We won't do the mistake that the Reform Party did, or the Canadian Alliance, when they merged with the Progressive Conservative. And you know, that was a mistake. Because right now also, if you're a conservative from Western Canada, Poilievre has nothing for you. He won't use the Constitution to build pipeline and to impose a pipeline on Quebec or BC. He won't do that. He won't change the equalization formula to be less generous. And that's why we have Western alienation. So can you believe there's 32% of the population in Alberta who want to separate, more than in Quebec?
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, in Quebec, in Quebec, it's only 30%. Over there, 32%. And you don't have any leader from the establishment political parties that is speaking to Western alienation with a solution. And we have a solution for them. That's why somebody in Alberta told me, Maxime, if I understand you, because we believe in a radical decentralization and a smaller government in Ottawa that will respect the Constitution, respect taxpayers, respect our Charter of Rights and Freedom. And that person told me when I was in Alberta, if I understand your position, if you are a separatist, you vote for Bernier. And if you are a federalist in Alberta, you vote for Bernier. I said, yes, because we are giving you the solution, and the solution not only for Alberta, but for the country. I'm saying the same thing in English and in French, in Quebec or in New Brunswick. We have a platform, and we believe that this platform will be able to unite our country and being sure that our country would be more prosperous. So answering your question shortly, no, we won't go back. That was the best political decision that I took when we decided to create the PPC in 2018. And I'm very happy with that. And we are building, actually, I will be back on the road this Thursday for 2 weeks in BC, Alberta, Manitoba, build the party, being ready for the next election, because as you know, we don't know when that election can happen.
Mm-hmm. Spoken like the Albertan from Quebec, which is one of your nicknames. So I know you are, to your credit, I mean, I don't know anybody who was earlier to the party in terms of expressing public concern about COVID-19 pandemic measures and lockdowns. And you've been extremely consistent with that. In fact, you put your own liberty on the line in ways that really very few other politicians have. One question I have for you, though, is, you know, obviously the COVID-19 pandemic has had the impact of eroding individual rights and freedoms in Canada. I know this is something you are very concerned about. I've heard you speak about it at length. I was reading something recently that actually I was not aware of because I wasn't around, but you probably are because your father was a politician in that era. But there was actually a lot of conservative resistance to the charter before it came into effect. There was concern by conservatives in your father's era that this was a Trojan horse, that in fact what the elder Trudeau was trying to do was to take the decision-making power away from the public and from the politicians and from the legislative process and hand it over to the judiciary, and that this would be used ultimately to achieve the expression of leftist values. And here we have left-wing policies that have been coming into force in Canada through the charter, through I think the misinterpretation of the charter. And Mr. Peckford was on the show. He agreed with that. Achieving leftist political change through electoral politics was time consuming and could always be reversed. But political change imposed by lawyers in robes, so to speak, could happen quickly and was not reversed. So here we have, through the courts, we have legal restrictions on abortion, contributing in a big way towards legalization of same-sex marriage, expulsion of prayer and Bible reading from many public schools, instituted many other policies that the political left was unable to achieve until the charter came into effect. And my question for you, being a lawyer and obviously a longtime politician, are you concerned, number one, I know you're concerned about the erosion of rights and freedoms, but here's my question. Is the charter the answer, given that history? Is the charter still the answer? Or is it really the only thing that politicians and lawyers like us have left to sort of argue with in the face of this extreme government encroachment?
Yeah, so in the Constitution, as you know, we have the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, but also we have a section, the non-extending clause. So that clause, so if you have a decision from a judge from the Supreme Court of Canada, and you as an elected politician don't like the interpretation of the court, you can say, you know, I won't follow that decision. And for the next 5 years, I will do what I think it's the best for my province. So I believe that that is there. You can use it if you think that you must use it to protect individual rights. But the charter, we don't need to rewrite the Constitution or our Charter of Rights. The challenge that we have, it's our politicians. We have politicians right now that are okay with not respecting the Constitution. And you have the opposition in Ottawa who is okay also about the government not respecting the Constitution. I believe that what we must do, we must change politicians. And, you know, it's the same thing in the U.S. They have a great Constitution, but the president is using presidential orders to pass legislation. And the president can say tomorrow that the country will be in war against a country without another country, without going to the Congress. So the problem is our politicians. It's not our constitution. Yeah, I believe that we can reopen and maybe put other clause in our constitutions. But for me, that's not the solution. The solution is to fight. And also, I understand a little bit, I don't agree with that, but you're right by saying that judges across the country during COVID-19, during the pandemic, they were saying no to our proposal, saying that, you know, all these measures don't respect the Constitution and our rights. And I tried to put myself in their shoes at that time. You're a judge. You have all the politicians, elected politicians in the country who agreed with that. And you have the population, 65-75% of the population, who agreed also with these draconian measures. And you're there and you have to take a decision in line with the Charter of Rights. And I believe that they didn't do that because they didn't want the first one to say no. But mm-hmm. I believe we are appealing all these decisions. And right now, I have a cause with Brian Peckford also for mm-hmm. my constitutional rights to be able to travel freely mm-hmm. across the country. The hearing will be October 31st. But I understand that because the pandemic is over, these measures are not in force anymore. And like I told you in the beginning, now 69% of Quebecers, vaccinated Quebecers, are saying that they won't take the third or fourth shots. So, and you have more opposition against these measures, I believe that a judge will have more courage to go with a decision in line with our constitutional rights. And so we'll see. And if not, we'll have to appeal up to the Supreme Court of Canada. And we need a legal decision because we want to have a legal decision showing that we were right and that was illegal and unconstitutional, because we don't want the federal government or provincial government to go back with draconian measures this winter or this fall. So speaking about the Constitution, I think we have a good document, but the problem that we have politicians that are not following the Constitution, knowing that when they're doing that, they have the approval of a big majority of Canadians. That was the case during COVID-19. So mm-hmm. we need to educate people, we need to be out there, and we need to change politicians.
You know, Max, you make a great point about this sort of government by fiat that we see. For example, in Canada, now for some reason that only they understand, the Liberals and NDP coalition has once again shut down Parliament. We're going to have a remote a Zoom Parliament again. And this leads to abuses of power. For example, the persecution of Tamara Leach, and only yesterday there was the incident in the United States where the FBI raided the home of Donald Trump under executive order. This is not democratic. Yeah. And I'd like to get your take on this. When I spoke with Brian Peckford was here, one of the things he expressed concern about is we're not being governed in Canada through parliamentary democracy, which is our tradition. That is being eroded too in favor of this, how did Mr. Trudeau put it, being able to turn on a dime. And so we're being governed by fiat. And so now during the summer break, while Parliament is closed, we're getting all these executive orders about fertilizer, about luxury taxes on cars, and so on and so on and so on. How do we reverse this trend? How do we get ourselves back on the track of being, as you put it, a liberal democracy that's run by elected politicians and not by, executive fiat?
Yeah, you're right about saying, in Canada, the Prime Minister and the Prime Minister office has a lot of power. And because, if you're a minister and you don't listen to the Prime Minister, you won't be able to be a minister anymore. You will lost your job. And so it's the Prime Minister office is very powerful in our system. And also the party system, the party line has a role to play also. If you're a member of parliament and you don't throw the party line, you won't be able to have a promotion. You won't be able to sit on a committee. So that's why we're saying, we need to have more free vote in parliament. We need to be able, the members of parliament must be able to express their point of view. If it's different than their party, that must be okay. We had that, until 1950, 60, we had that real discussion. And now we don't have that real discussion. We have the party lines for everybody. MPs cannot express their point of view. And add to that the powerful of the PMO office, the Prime Minister office. So it's not the parliamentary or members of parliament are not there to decide. And also the committee, why? I don't understand why in parliament, if you're in parliament, you can ask for having a study on any subject and on a committee, and you'll have witnesses that will come, you'll have debate, but we don't have that. They don't use that. So it's, and you have the press. If you add the press that is not doing their job as objective, they are, throwing the party line coming from the Liberal Party of Canada and the PMO. So it's very hard to have debate in our society right now because of all that. And it's a challenge for me. I've been canceled. I try to do interview with mainstream media and they won't. We know we have more support than the Green Party of Canada, 5%, and the Green only 2%. And our point of view, it's not important for them. Yes, it's a big challenge. And, that's why I believe that it's more... We are in an economic crisis right now, but it's more also a cultural war that we must do in our country to regain our parliamentary system, to be sure that members of parliament will be able to express their point of view, and to be sure that, you know, the PMO won't have too much power that they have right now. And it was the same thing under Harper. I was a minister, and, you know, if you don't throw the party line, and if the PMO is not happy with you, it's a big risk. But we must, you know, be changing. We must change that. And I believe in UK, you know, parliament members of parliament have more power. You know what happened to the prime minister over there? So I believe that members of parliament here in Canada must take that power that is there. They must not be afraid to take it, like they're doing a little bit more in UK than in Canada.
Mm-hmm. So, Max, one of the things that distinguishes your party from the other ones in Canada, clearly, and you've talked about this today, are its values. And you've been very outspoken, being against things like the, well, I call it DIE, diversity, inclusion, equity, critical race theory, radical hysteria, and these other very divisive leftist policies that are being pushed by the liberals. And many people attribute these to things like the World Economic Forum and the UN 2030 agenda as attacks on Canadian sovereignty. Do you agree with the idea that there's a danger that Canada is not being governed from within? It's certainly not. I know you agree that it's not being governed in the best interest of Canadians. But do you subscribe to the theory, perhaps the conspiracy theory, that there are people, certain people outside of Canada who are actually running things and really undermining Canadian sovereignty right now through these policies?
No, but you have a point also by saying that. You know, the World Economic Forum, the UN, they're not a supranational government. They cannot dictate to us in Canada what to do. But what they're very efficient at, the World Economic Forum is a socialist organization, a woke organization, and they are promoting their ideas. And they're very efficient to do that. And we have wokeism in Canada and all that DIE culture, diversity, inclusion, and equity because of Trudeau, because of the Trudeau government decided to agree with that philosophy and very openly. So we just have to change Trudeau. But I understand also the fact that these organizations are very powerful, they're very influential, and they're very efficient to do that. You just have to say no to this organization. We are the body that is saying no to the UN with the UN Compact on Migration, no to the World Economic Forum with the Arrive Canada app coming from the World Economic Forum. The World Economic Forum did not impose that on Canada. Trudeau decided to implement that here in Canada. But what I must say, we must fight that ideology because look in Europe. They created in Europe in 1951, they had the first free trade agreement in Europe, a free trade agreement, goods and services. And so that I'm all for free trade. But after 1951, they signed more treaties and more treaties and more treaties. And the last one was in 1993, the Maastricht Treaty, when they created that supranational government and the UN Parliament and the EU Parliament, sorry, and the European Union. So you, after more than 50 years, starting by free trade agreements, you have right now in Europe a supranational government, and that's why people in the UK decided enough is enough. We want to regain our sovereignty, and they said no to the European Union and yes to Brexit. So right now the UN and the World Economic Forum, they have the same goal. They want to have a supra international government. So we must fight that ideology. And if we don't fight that, it may happen in 10 years, in 20 years, in 50 years. So that's our position. We want our country to be a sovereign country, and we always fight for the sovereignty of our country. But we must understand that the UN and the World Economic Forum and the World Health Organization, they have a goal, they have a plan, and their goal is to be able to have a world government, maybe in 20, in 25 years, I don't know, like they did in Europe. We need to fight that, and we are fighting that. But right now, all the policies that Trudeau is implementing, nobody told him, you know, you must do it. If you don't, you know, something will happen to Canada. No, it's part of his philosophy also. So for him, it's normal to have policies like that. You need to change politicians and having people that will fight for our country and saying no to this organization.
Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to believe that Justin Trudeau has a philosophy, because that word means lover of knowledge.
But he told us that. Like Layton, before being prime minister, he told us that. He said, you know, he admired the Chinese dictatorship, and because they can do what they want very quickly. So right. he told us, and that's what he's doing. And, you know, so we need to understand that. Yeah. And
here's a big question, though. You know, you make a great point about, you know, removing Trudeau. And obviously, the Liberals have been promoting these as their quote-unquote values. I think they're fundamentally demoralizing and hurting Canadians myself. But let's cast our eyes forward to the sunny days of a post-Trudeau era, where you are the new prime minister. Are you going to use that pulpit to promote conservative values, or are you simply going to reject these leftist values, these harmful ones, and sort of let Canadians decide for themselves what they want to believe? Because I know you have very strong ideas about things like mass immigration and so on. Yeah. And you're also very strong on the concept of preserving the Western canon, you know, the best part of ourselves that we've inherited for many, many centuries. So is that something that a PPC government would do, promote certain conservative values, say the way someone like a Ron DeSantis is doing in Florida? Or would that go contrary to the PPC vision?
No, we'll do like Ron DeSantis is doing in Florida, actually. And, you know, we'll have the legitimacy to do it. We won't have a hidden agenda because, mm-hmm. you know, the platform in 2019 was the same platform for the election in 2021 and will be the same one. So when we'll be in government, we'll have all the legitimacy to execute our platform and to put forward legislations in line with our platform, because, you know, it is clear after two elections, I think more people understand what we are doing, what is our vision for this country. And after the third one also, more people will understand. So we'll have a strong mandate to do what we need to do. And, mm-hmm. you know, if we don't have any protest in from Parliament when I'll be prime minister a day, I believe that it's because I'm not doing my job. I believe mm-hmm. that we may have protests, but we will be out there and we will explain our policies and very honestly and publicly and being very transparent. And our goal is to try to have more people that will support us. A little bit like Margaret Thatcher did in UK in 1979, when, you know, she was a strong conservative and at that time, the party, the country was a socialist country. And she told people in UK, this is what I want to do and I will do it. And she was strong and she was able to convince more people and she was able to be in parliament and she did what she said that she's going to do. So that would be the same thing for us.
Max, do you have any ideas about how Canadians are going to be able to resist some of these very harmful economic policies that Liberals are promoting? We've seen over in Europe, I mean, the danger, the revolt of the Dutch farmers, and now the same ideas, really bad ideas, are being implemented here. We've got inflation out of control, taxes on taxes. We've got another carbon tax coming. How are we going to resist all this really destructive economic policy none of which has really been demonstrated to be of any worth to Canadians, and in fact is obviously very harmful. Take only the attacks on the energy industry, which is so vital to Canada. How are we going to fight back against this, all these things in the meantime, until the wonderful day when we can cry freedom and the Liberals are no longer in power?
Yeah, we must understand the cause of all that. Why are we having all these leftist policies, you know, the war on the oil and gas industry, and now Trudeau is starting the war against our farmers, the Netherlands is doing right now. So we must understand why Trudeau is doing that. Why? Because he signed the Paris Accord, and you know he wants to be sure that we will respect our goals for the Paris Accord. So we won't sign the Paris Accord. We won't do anything there. We won't impose policies like that. But we must understand that the Conservative Party and Pierre Poilievre, Pierre said that, that he won't impose a carbon tax. But at the same time, he will sign the Paris Accord and he will have to impose more regulations. And when you impose a regulation, there's always a cost, and the cost, we will have to pay for that, we consumers. So we must ask the question to conservative, why are you supporting the Paris Accord? And I believe that we'll be able to win when people will understand that all these policies are coming because of these international organizations, the UN and the World Economic Forum, and now it's in Canada under legislation. So we are sovereign. We just have to say no for all these crazy leftist climate change policies. But you need to have some conviction, and you need to have the courage of your conviction to speak about it. So the conservative, because the population is not there right now, that's why they're pro Paris Accord. So if they are in government, they won't fight to change the public opinion. They will just do and follow the wind and impose other kinds of measures against the oil and gas industry or against the farmers to be sure that they will respect the Paris Accord.
Max, you mentioned earlier about the notwithstanding clause as perhaps a protection against federal encroachment or judicial encroachment upon provincial powers. But we've seen in Quebec of late that essentially they now regard themselves as a sovereign state within Canada. It's almost the reversal of the Plains of Abraham. And then in Alberta, we have, for example, Danielle Smith, who by all accounts is the front runner in the race to replace Mr. Kenney, talking about the Sovereignty Act, which would be a provincial statute that which would say basically hold up the hand to the federal government, say, you know, stop, we're not going to enforce this. Are you concerned about this? Because it is maybe a necessary defense that provinces are developing, but it certainly isn't uniting the country, is it?
Yeah, you know, I understand why, you know, if you're an Albertan and you want to preserve your autonomy, like in Quebec and other provinces, because the federal government is not respecting the constitution. And when Danielle Smith is saying that she's ready to table legislation and saying no to federal intrusions, you know, I agree with that. I agree with that because our policy is to respect the constitution and, like I said, radical decentralization. And we won't interfere in provincial jurisdiction. If in Alberta you want to have your own police force, you'll be able to. If you want to have your caisse de dépôt, your pension fund, you'll be able to have to. If you want to have your own control, your own income tax, you'll be able to have that. If you want to select your immigration, you'll be able to do that. We will respect the constitution, and by doing that, that will solve that challenges that we have with the unity in our country. Alberta would be happy, but all the other provinces will be able to have more autonomy also. So we're not giving something to Alberta and nothing to Manitoba. It will be the same thing for every province. And if you respect the constitution, we'll have a united country and a more prosperous country. But I understand now, because national establishment politicians don't want to have that discussion. and they're not looking at the Western alienation. Poliev and Trudeau, they don't speak about it. It's for them, it's like there's no problem there, so they don't speak about it. But what she's saying, hey, wake up, we're tired of all that. We want to be able to control our own destiny in Alberta. Wake up, and I will table that bill. And she will table that bill to be sure to have a discussion with Ottawa. And I understand that point, but I'm telling her, with us, you won't have to table that bill because you will have all the power that you have under the Constitution, and you'll be very happy with it.
Lex, you are somebody who is obviously has your finger squarely on the pulse of the Canadian voters and the Canadian populace. There's an old saying that the left goes too far. Do you think we've reached that point, and that are you seeing signs that maybe the tide is starting to turn? You've talked about how some of these leftist policies, ideas have taken hold in our culture. Are you sensing that maybe more and more Canadians are fed up and they're more receptive to a message like the one that your party is presenting, an option where people are going to have more individual freedom, they crave more responsibility, more local solutions as opposed to a giant centralized government that controls everything? Are you seeing signs that maybe this is starting to, that there's been a thaw and that there is a change? I'm curious to know what your sense is about this.
Yes, I think so. I think so. Just look at our electoral score. You know, we had 840,000 people that voted for us, and in the first election in 2019, when I was speaking about immigration, for example, you know, people were saying Bernie is a racist and blah blah blah. But, you know, that's not the case. And we just want to have fewer immigrants and a sustainable immigration system, like you just said in the beginning. But now I spoke about it at the last election. And, you know, more people are ready to have a discussion about it. So that's why I believe that the future will be brighter. I believe that we will win these battles. But it won't be tomorrow, maybe. You need to be always up there, and that's what we are doing. So I believe that we won the battle on the draconian measures and lockdowns, and I don't think it will come back. Maybe I'm too optimistic, but I don't think it will, because more population, or the majority of the population, understand that lockdowns or not, that didn't change anything. So we must do the same thing with other subjects and policies. But I'm there. That's why I'm traveling across the country, meeting our people, doing some speeches, some rallies. And I believe that, yes, the left went too far, and that will come back. But I don't know when. The earlier will be the best. But we are there to be sure that it will happen.
Well, that's a nice way, a sort of a hopeful way to end off. Max, you've been very generous with your time. We know that your time is precious. We're very grateful that you spent some time with us and so we could learn more about you and your party and the great work that you're doing. I'm really looking forward to see if I can get out and listen to you speak publicly. The last part of our program that we have is called the Reading List. And okay. So I'm going to let you end off. I know you probably have some really great book ideas. But I know that you're a fan of Professor Hayek. You and I share that. I've read a number of his books. And so the recommendation that I'm going to make today is a book that you've probably read called The Constitution of Liberty, the Definitive Edition. And so this is a book that was written some time ago, but is incredibly relevant to what's going on today. In fact, it's almost a recipe to fix what's going on here. So the book description is from the $700 billion bailout of the banking industry to President Obama's $787 billion stimulus package. Those numbers seem small by today's standards. To the highly controversial passage of federal health care reform, conservatives and concerned citizens alike have grown increasingly fearful of big government. And Professor Hayek in this book, this is considered his classic statement of the ideals of freedom and liberty, ideals that he believes have guided and must continue to guide the growth of Western civilization. And so here Hayek defends the principles of a free society, casting a skeptical eye on the growth of the welfare state and examining the challenges to freedom posed by an ever-expanding government. And boy, do we ever have that in Canada right now, as well as its corrosive effect on the creation, preservation, and utilization of knowledge. And that's something we haven't talked about, but that is something that comes with the erosion of individual freedom, is also sadly an increase in ignorance. And Hayek talks about this. And so in opposition to those who call for the state to play a greater role in society, Hayek puts forward a nuanced argument for prudence. And guided by this quality, he demonstrates that a free market system and a democratic polity under the rule of law and with strong constitutional protections of individual rights represents the best chance for the continuing existence of liberty. So, Max, I have to say, it sounds as though Professor Hayek has his fingerprints all over the PPC, which is part of the reason why I admire you and your party very much. So do you have any other ideas, selections that you could point people to, perhaps your own party's own website or other resources people can turn to find out more about you and your party and your message?
Yeah, but I just want to answer that. Behind me, you can see here, that's all Hayek, and I've read it, but in French. I've read the French version, but it's all here, and you're right. That's a great, I like Hayek, Mrs. Rothbard, and the website that I like to go every day is Mises.org. That's a great organization, so I like what they're doing. And that's why the PPC and our platform is based on four principles: individual freedom, like I said, personal responsibility, respect, and fairness. And all our policies are in line with these principles, and it's a coherent platform. So if people want to know more about us, they can go on our website, peoplespartyofcanada.ca, read our platform. They can follow me on Twitter, Maxime Bernier. They can follow me on Facebook. They can follow me on Rumble. I have a show also every 2 weeks, the Mad Max Show, Mad Max Live, at 7:30 every two Thursday. So just follow me on Facebook and Twitter, and you'll know everything about the BBC. And actually, I'm traveling out west, and if you want to follow me, you can go on the peoplespartyofcanada.ca webpage, events, and I hope I'll be able to see you when I'll be on the road.
Thanks very much. I was curious about that Mad Max nickname, because I've never seen you very angry. I wasn't sure how you felt about that particular nickname. But I guess it's more of Mad Max, in the context of being a rebel, like in the movies, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, some journalists were saying, "Oh, Bernier, Mad Max," and they called me like that. And I said, "Yes, I'm mad because of these policies. I'm mad about what is happening in our country. I'm mad about the deficit, our huge debt. The wokeism everywhere. So that's why, I use that, and that's the Mad Max show. And it's fun. We're speaking about policies." About the news, what is happening, and we are promoting the party also.
Well, thanks again for being with us today, Max. I really admire you very much and your party. And I hope one day that I can have you on the show again when you're our prime minister.
I hope so. I'm going to work hard for that. Thank you, Leighton, and I hope I'll be able to see you soon.
All right. Take care. Thanks again.
Bye-bye. Thank you.